Ben, thank you for taking time to chat with us. We really appreciate this.
Well, it's my pleasure.
Readers of SMAs.com might have seen some of our recent email correspondence, and they would know that you and I are both, once upon a time, radio guys back in southeast Missouri and northeast Arkansas. So let's start there. Tell us how you got into broadcasting, if you can remember, and then we'll move on to how you made the jump to being a professional musician.
Well, I've always been into music, and when rock and roll was invented, I used to go hang around the radio station and watch the guys work. Look through the window from the studio into the control room.
What station was that?
That was KLCN in Blytheville, Arkansas. And I ended up working there years later after I'd had a year's radio training at Arkansas State when I got in college. But
now, how old were you when you started hanging around the radio station?
I must have been about 12 or 13.
What year would that have been?
56, 57, when rock and roll was really, you know, getting going real good. And I just go up and watch the guys work. It was neat.
Looked like a pretty easy job, didn't it?
No, it didn't look easy, but it was interesting, and the music's what drew me to it, because I'd always listened to the radio for the music, you know, and it was kind of what drew me to the radio station was the music.
So KLCN was your first radio job?
Actually, I worked at the campus radio station at Arkansas State, KASU, kind of part-time until the summer. When I went home for the summer, I worked at KLCN 7 days a week the whole summer long to get enough money to go back to school for another year, you know. And I remember I had to sign on in the morning at 5 on AM and went back at 6 in the evening and worked till sign off on FM. And if the Cardinals were on the West Coast doing a doubleheader, I didn't get out there till 3 o'clock, and I'd go downtown and eat breakfast and go back and sign the AM on again.
Now, that does sound like fun.
It was a lot of work, but it was fun. And at that time, KLCN had a fire in the control room, or in the studios downtown. And they had moved the control room out to the transmitter shack where the engineer used to have to live. Because at one time, you had to have an engineer on duty all the time the transmitter was operating.
Now, did a Mr. Sudbury own the station at that time?
Harold Sudbury, yes.
I mean, he was something of a legend in northeast Arkansas broadcasting.
Yeah. Well, the guy, he bought the station. Well, now, he bought it from another fella, but the guy that started that station did a test in 1929, I think, with some kind of tube, and people were picking him up in Newark, New Jersey, and everywhere like that. It was quite an experience. His name was Dutch Lensnick, which is the L in KLCN. And CN is Courier News, and he owned the newspaper and started the radio station, too, in the early 20s, I think. Messing with it, but.
In one of your emails, I think you said you worked in more than one radio station.
I worked in just about all of them in northeast Arkansas. Maybe there's a couple I didn't. I didn't work at KADA in Jonesboro. I always wanted to, but didn't.
And, well, mention a couple of the call letters for folks, if there's anybody still living besides me and you who would remember that.
Well, I worked at KBIB in Monette right after it went on the air in 64. And worked again after I'd been in college a few years and tried to stay in college after a car wreck. Worked at KPCA in Mark Tree and was in the car wreck on the way back to Jonesboro where I lived, and had to drop out of college for a semester. Ended up at KWIN in Wynn, and then at KOSE in Osceola, and then at KBTM in Jonesboro, and then back at KBIB. And after that, I left and worked at KCON down in Conway in central Arkansas, and then I got out of radio for about 15 years.
All right, that's a nice segue, as we used to say. You went off and did something else. You became a professional musician.
Right. I'd always played in bands, either part-time or full-time, while I was doing radio, you know.
So you headed for Nashville, just like in the movies.
Right, just like in the movies.
Well, what'd you do? Tell us about it.
Well, I went to Nashville and ended up going on the road with a few artists. Some of them were kind of older artists that nobody had heard of anymore. And
well, now I'm going to make you back up a little bit.
Okay.
You get in a car and you go to Nashville.
Right.
Like thousands of young men and women do.
Right.
Did you already have some connections? I mean, what did you do when you got to Nashville? You didn't immediately get a gig.
A friend of mine that played drums from Little Rock had moved over there, and he'd been there about a year, I guess. And I knew if I went to Nashville, I would use up, you know, my $50 in savings and motel rooms pretty quick. So I stayed with this guy, and luckily ended up doing a recording session the day I got there. Met some people, and we went down in Printer's Alley and sat in with bands, and my name started getting around pretty quick.
So you did a session on your first day in Nashville?
My first day. I don't know if anybody's ever done that before or not. But
do you remember what the session was for? Or?
Yes, I do. A guy named X Lincoln, X, the letter X. His real name was Billy Tubb. He changed his name to X Lincoln. He was Ernest Tubb's nephew, but he was writing songs, and we demoed about four songs he had written. And I'm trying to remember, we did it at Pete Drake's studio, and Pete had played steel on a ton of hit records and had the studio. And X and the guitar player that played that night, a guy named Vernon Pilder, ended up working for John Anderson, and I think are still working for John Anderson. But
so your buddy takes you down to the studio and says, this is my pal from Northeast Arkansas. And
now, actually, what happened was the phone was ringing when we went in his apartment. I waited on him in the parking lot. He gave me directions, and I found this place, you know. And phone was ringing, and he picked it up. It was about 5 o'clock in the afternoon. He said, yeah, you need a bass player? Well, I'll bring one with me. So I just showed up and played bass on it with him, you know, and
Now, forgive my lack of musical understanding here. Would that have been an electric bass or a stand-up acoustic bass? Or?
Well, at that time, it was an electric bass. I played both. And some sessions, they wanted upright on, and some, they just, you know, were settling for electric, you know, whatever.
Well, now, what, if anything, did you know about being a studio musician to, on your first day at Nashville, you go in, you sit down? I mean, did you know what to do?
Oh, yeah. I'd done recording sessions in Little Rock. And
okay.
And even in Conway, a little small studio. And when I was in college in Jonesboro, there was I'm trying to remember the name of the company, but it was Alley Records, and the studio was at the end of this little alley at downtown Jonesboro.
Did you have any sort of plan in mind for your career in Nashville? I mean, did you see yourself as a studio musician, or did you think you'd hook up with a band?
Well, I was hoping to be a studio musician. It was not so much for the money, but it was lucrative. But the creative part of it's what drew me to that, because you were really under the wire, you know, because they had a certain time limit and they wanted to get so many songs done, and things worked. You know, things went pretty fast, and it was a challenge, but the politics to getting in into the studio business was just totally alien to me. I'd never had to do that, you know.
Tell us about the politics. I mean, is it just a real competitive?
That and the fact that, you know, you almost had to be one of them to be one of them, you know. And I don't know how you got in on the ground floor. I never did learn.
Didn't have to.
Yeah, but well, I didn't do that. I didn't do that many. I don't think I've played on, but. I'm trying to think if I played on any Stars records or not. I know Henson Cargill redid Skip a Rope, and I remember playing on that. I don't know if it was ever released or if it did anything, if it was. But.
When I remember the song Skip a Rope.
Yeah, but they redid it years later, and the reissue is what I played on. But I don't know. I don't know if it did anything.
So you said you got some road gigs pretty quickly. I mean, you went off on tour.
Let me think. Who was first? I remember working for Doug Kershaw for a couple of weeks in Atlanta. Seems like a guy that used to play bass for Buck Owens was striking out on his own. And I went to did about 2 or 3 weeks on the road with him out west. And if you'll hang on a second, that name will come to me.
That's
I'm
all
at
right.
that age.
That's all right. What was it like being in the music business in Nashville at that time? I mean,
at that time, it was wonderful. It was like a brotherhood. It was a big community, and everybody knew everybody. And, you know, if you got out of work, you just put the word out, and somebody would find you something, or something would come along, or you'd luck into something. It was really neat, and you met a lot of good players. I can't tell you how many great musicians I've gotten to play with. It's just, you know, it's been phenomenal. And I consider myself very lucky for that, you know, from that aspect of it. Because not only have I made some great long-lasting friendships, but I've gotten to play with some killer musicians. So.
Anybody come immediately to mind that when you think back, you think, man, I sure was great playing with him or her?
Oh, yeah, there's lots of guys like that.
Drop a few names for us now. Come on. don't be shy.
I don't know if I can just conjure up any right now. There's been so many. Odell Martin was a great guitar player. I remember rehearsing with Chet Atkins for a show at the Opry House one day, and I told Odell I was going to be there. And he walked down the hall looking for us, and Chet looked up and saw him and said, "Was that Odell?" And I said, "Yeah." And he just threw his guitar down and went and got him. Brought him back in the room and said, "Play me something." And I didn't realize Odell was that good until I saw Chet Atkins do that. You know, I thought, wow. I knew he was a good player, but he got to Nashville in the mid-50s, I think. He was from up in Kentucky. He's a great player. And, I don't know. Other players I've worked with, Bucky Barrett was a great guitar player. Paul Franklin and Mike Smith, and I could name just hundreds of steel guitar players. Buddy Emmett. And guys I just got to play with, either live or on records or whatever.
We're going to come back to the music. I want to shift gears on you just a little bit, because I was looking back through some of the email that you and I had exchanged, and I loved the story about Holly Ferris and the Scene of Light.
Isn't that great?
Could you recount that for us and maybe even elaborate on that a little bit, because it's a great story, and you'll want to tell the folks who Holly Ferris was or is.
Yeah. Holly was in the jazz band with me at Arkansas State. And I was a trumpet player. And we used to go up to Scene to try to see the light. It would come out on a kind of a dirt gravel road.
Mm-hmm.
That ran by, I don't remember if there was a railroad track or a ditch next to it, but most roads had one or the other.
I sat on that road, but I never saw the light.
I never did either. And then I was disappointed, because I always thought it was real. Too many people had, you know, talked about seeing it. But Holly supposedly got out of the car one night when I wasn't there, and he was with a bunch of other guys, and went to find the light, and the light came out and hit him on the head and knocked him out and then went away. And when Holly woke up, of course, he was kind of dazed. And I'm not real sure alcohol might not have been involved in some of this. But
I wonder how many cover stories the Scene of Light has provided.
There's no telling. I don't know. But it was quite a legend, you know, and especially in that era.
I was equally sort of intrigued by the fact that Holly Ferris has something of a musical connection as well.
Yeah.
Besides playing with you.
As far as we can tell, Holly Ferris is the only white musician that James Brown has ever had. And if I'm not mistaken, he's probably still working with James Brown right now.
So
I hadn't talked to Holly in years, but friends of mine have kept up with him. And when James Brown was in prison, Holly got other jobs and quit them when James Brown got out of prison and went back to work for him. He liked working for him that much, you know. And he's quite a good trumpet player, I might say.
And he's still playing.
As far as I know, he still is.
I'll tell you what we can do after we get this interview up on the website. You can track him down and ask him to listen to it, and if tell him if we got it wrong or if you got it wrong, we'll give him equal time.
Okay, well, that's fair enough, especially about the light, because we need to know about that.
Well, we do, and I'm still waiting for some of the folks down from the Scenic area to get in touch with us. Now, after you and I sort of bumped into each other online, I did a little Google search on you and found... found a Ben Brogdon, who was listed as a member of the original Broadway cast of The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas, which was later made into a movie with Burt Reynolds and Dolly Parton.
Right.
And that's you.
That's me. That's right.
Now, that sounds like a story.
Well, it probably is.
How did that all come about?
I had a friend from Texas that worked with me on a Dottie West band when we were traveling with her. He was really into Western swing music. In fact, he's probably the foremost authority on Western swing that I've ever met. He lives in Fort Worth now.
Can you tell us his name?
His name is Craig Chambers. And Craig and I just talked about it and decided we'd put together a Western swing band. And we got a bunch of guys that like to play that kind of music together and just started working up tunes. And we started getting as close to free studio time as we could anywhere and tried to start working on an album, which we eventually finished. And I believe we probably recorded that album in 6 or 7 different studios. So you can imagine what it was like to try to mix it and make everything sound the same.
Can we still buy that album?
I don't think so. It was on Rounder Records. That's a label out of Boston. And I think it's out of print.
Okay.
So I do have a couple of copies of it.
So you guys had this band, and then what?
Well, we were kind of playing at a place called the Pickin' Parlor in Nashville one night, just for the fun of it. Now, our opening act was, I wish I hadn't started that sentence. I do this all the time.
That's all right. It'll come to you. Or we'll add it to the website later.
Well, they were like a Sons of the Pioneers kind of group. They were on TV, on the Nashville Network a lot.
I almost think I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, you do, and I can't think of their names, but I'm sorry about
that. That's all right.
But anyway, they were opening act, and it was snowing, and nobody came. And there was just almost nobody in the place, and we were playing for the door, which ended up being the name of our album, which means that you were taking in whatever they, you know, took in at the door was going to be our pay.
Ooh.
And so we kind of wrote it off as just fun to go do. And a lot of even session players, successful session players, had bands, and they would go down there and play a lot just for the fun of it. But anyway, we're sitting there, and these five people come in, and a fellow that had produced Asleep at the Wheel and some of Willie Nelson's early records on the West Coast and some of Bob Wills' last records just happened to be in touch with these folks from, two of them were from Texas, or three of them were, and they had gotten together with Universal Pictures, and were going to produce this play about the chicken ranch down in Texas. So they were looking for a band that could play Western Swing and do head arrangements and, you know, just make up, well, let's make it up stuff on the spot, you know, to go along with the song you're playing.
Yeah.
So this guy told them about it. So they got on a plane after being in California all day and flew to Nashville to come down and hear us because it may have been the last night we'd ever played together. Because, you know, it was getting to be more, a lot of guys were having to go find jobs and work, of course.
So they were looking for a Western Swing band, heard about you guys, come to hear you.
Nashville, yeah.
Okay.
So they're sitting there listening to us, fell in love with us, and just hired us on the spot to come to New York. And we did it on a spec basis. We speculated whether or not it was going to be a hit. And we thought, well, shoot, we'll go up there and try it, and if it's a hit, it's a hit. If it's not, we'll come home. It's not that big a deal.
Now, Broadway's a long way from Blytheville, Arkansas.
Well, yeah.
Now, did you have a family at the time?
Well, no, I've never had children of my own that I know of. And at the time, I was, I believe, I was between marriages at that time. So I really didn't have much to worry about. I believe I had a girlfriend.
You do sound like a musician.
Well, yeah. I tell people that I have a beard because I've been married so many times I had to hide rice marks on my face.
So they hired you guys on the spot, and you get in a car, you get on a plane, you go to New York, and then
actually,
what?
Actually, we drove up there, and they had rented us a house to live in, all of us together, which if you've ever tried that, that's another whole deal. There's probably a book in that one, that one house with all of us in it.
the play opened in 1978?
Yes, and this was like February of 78, and there was a blizzard, if you look at the weather history. And, of course, the fiddle player and I, in his car, pulling a trailer, drove on ice all the way from Nashville to just about the Pennsylvania state line, and then it turned into snow and wet roads. But from what I understand, they had a cattle call for the play, and something like 2,000 or 3,000 people showed up to audition in that 24-inch blizzard they had in New York, and we got there right after that, and stayed in this house which had no heat or running water in it for a couple of days because it was a demonstration house. It was a demo, and they hadn't hooked everything up. The first time they turned the water on, of course, the basement filled up with water because the plumbing wasn't complete. Now, I'm telling you, there's a whole story in that alone. But
I'll buy your book. Now, did the play open off-Broadway?
It opened off-Broadway. We rehearsed for, I'm going to say, a couple of months, maybe 6 weeks at the least. And the play opened off-Broadway in the very northeast corner of the village at a theater on 3rd Avenue and about 34th or 35th Street, somewhere like that. And right down the street was the famous 3rd Avenue Deli, and around the corner was a famous Italian restaurant where there had been several mafia killings and stuff stuff like that. It was an interesting neighborhood. But it didn't stay off Broadway very long before we moved up you know, to Times Square. It was only like a few weeks.
Do you remember the first time you guys played actually on Broadway and you're on stage? And did it ever occur to you, hey, Mom, look at me. Here I am on Broadway.
It was kind of a trip. It wasn't so much that. It's just that, you know, well, this may turn into something, you know, because we didn't know after it went on Broadway whether it was going to last. We were still just kind of waiting to see, you know, but the fact that we could go back and say, yeah, we played on Broadway. It didn't last but 2 days, but we played there.
But it lasted 2 years for you, right?
2 years for me, and I think the play ran 4 years on Broadway, and it went to Boston and came back and did not Broadway, but was back in New York again for another year or two.
Do you remember going to see the movie once that came out?
Oh, yes, I remember that.
What'd you think?
Well, I had kind of gotten word from the guys, you know, when we were supposed to be in the movie. They'd made kind of, not promises, but they had alluded to the fact that they would use the band and the score and everything in the movie, and they used some of the songs, but they re-recorded them. We got hints pretty quick that it was going to be another car chase movie, you know, or something like that. Well, Hal Durham was an actor.
Okay, yeah.
I'm thinking of the producer, and I can't think of his name right now. But anyway, the movie wasn't bad. Don't get me wrong. It was a good movie as far as movies go, but the play seemed to draw you more into it and was a little more in line with what really happened as far as the closing of the chicken ranch and the people involved, you know.
So you came back to Nashville.
Yeah, I didn't. New York wasn't my cup of tea. I probably shouldn't have come back to Nashville. I probably should have stuck it out and ran, you know, for the whole run of the play. But probably would have been better for me.
Well, it sounds like things have worked out well. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what you're doing these days, Ben?
Well, after I came back to Nashville, I did some more road work, some studio work, and ended up thinking I was, you know, needed to get out of the fast lane, so I moved back to Arkansas. Stayed there about 3.5 years, and a guy offered me a job in a little music theater that he was opening in Williamsburg, Virginia. I worked there for 6 years, and that ended for me. And a friend of mine that I'd worked with there had been working at Dollywood, and they needed somebody that could play electric and upright bass. So I came down to check it out, took the job for a half a season at Dollywood, and ended up getting a job at another place that lasted about 3 years. And then after that, I was out of work for a couple of years.
Ah, the life of a musician.
Yes, sir. It's just, you know, feast or famine. It's always been like that. But I ended up back at Dollywood last summer, and I guess I did it right this time. They hired me back for this year. That's where I'm working now. We do a one-hour show 2 or 3 times a day. It just depends on which day it is. So about 5 days a week, which is perfect for me. I'm getting older and don't want to work that much.
So if anybody's planning a trip to Dollywood, how would we get a chance to stop by and listen to what's the name of the band that you are in now?
The show is called Back Where I Come From, which I think is a Kenny Chesney song. I'm not sure. But that's the name of the show, and it's they mix a little bluegrass in with modern country music, a little gospel music, and they feature a Grand Ole Opry artist or 2 weeks at a time, in the middle of the show. So I get to work with a lot of people I knew in Nashville, and it's kind of neat. But our show is on Tuesday through Sunday right now. I think in a couple of weeks, our day at the park is closed on Tuesday and Thursday, so we'll be working the other days of the week. And I think the show runs till about the middle of October, if I'm not mistaken.
You have seen a lot of changes. I mean, you've been in the music business a long time now and started in the radio business. Any thoughts about the music business these days that you care to share with us? I mean, what's going on? I mean, a lot of things changing in terms with the internet and music and iPods and...
Well, a lot of that is really over my head, to be honest with you. Not that technology has passed me by, but technology has passed me by, okay? I'm just now getting, you know, used to the idea of burning CDs. So But I can understand the attractiveness of what's happening now technically. Musically, I don't know about it. Kind of being an old-timer, it's not to say there's not good music happening now, but it seems like you got to wade through more bad stuff to get to the good stuff than you used to.
Now, I don't want to go all back home on the folks listening to this, but since you and I are from Northeast Arkansas and Southeast Missouri, you got a couple of local kids there that are doing pretty well. Sheryl Crow, I understand,
absolutely,
has recently bought a home somewhere in the Nashville area, and another Kennett boy, Trent Tomlinson, is hearing his stuff. I mean, you run into those folks ever?
Hardly ever. I don't think I've met either one of them. I had a good friend that I grew up with. He was a little younger than me. That's still, golly, I started another sentence. I can't finish, man. I'm sorry.
It's all right.
What is the parrot head? What's his name?
Jimmy Buffett?
Yeah, he's Jimmy Buffett's band leader. Has been for years. Name's Mike Utley.
Yeah?
He and I have been, I hadn't seen
Mike.
Well,
that's a familiar name, too.
Yeah, we pass notes back and forth through people we know, you know. But we hadn't seen each other in a long time. I think he's living in Nashville. But he's about the only other person from Northeast Arkansas that made it big. A guy named Jerry Jay that I used to work for. He and I worked together at KBIB, and he lives down in South Mississippi now, near Gulfport. And we keep in touch, but like I say, these are guys my age. Sheryl Crow and Trent Tomlinson, and I, you know, never met either one of them. But they're certainly talented, no doubt about that.
Well, I really appreciate you taking time. I look up here and see that I've gobbled up about half an hour of your beautiful, hot Sunday afternoon as we record this. Anything else that I haven't asked about that you'd like to share with us?
No, I don't guess. Is there anything else you'd like to know?
No, this has been fun, though.
I was going to tell you, and I forgot when we were talking about Kennett. In about 1990, I think, Joe Keen called me and wanted me to play on a couple of songs that... who's the guy from Malden? God dang, I got to quit doing that. Edit this out.
No. We're going to get this together. Narvel Phelps.
Narvel, golly, thank you. I'm so sorry. And my apologies to Narvel for forgetting that.
That's all right.
In fact, Narvel came in KLCN when I was working there and brought a record when it was coming out. That was, that was a real trip for me because I had seen him, I believe, when I was in junior high over at Hayti at a talent contest. And he was playing rock and roll. I loved it, rockabilly. But anyway, I went and played on a couple of songs of an album he was putting out and recording up there in Joe Keen's studio. And I was supposed to work with Narvel one night in Nashville, but it got canceled for a strange reason. Weird.
Well, I have no doubt that after folks hear this pithy and thought-provoking interview on my website, the offers will be flooding in. Hey, Ben, this has been fun. I appreciate you talking to us.
Well, I've enjoyed it. I've enjoyed it a lot.